This is the Talk Theater in Chicago interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Anne Nicholson-Weber, and my guests are two ensemble members at Rivendell Theater Ensemble, the founder and artistic director, Tara Mallon, and associate artistic director and founding ensemble member, Mary Cross. And later in the interview, we're going to be joined by Michael Salish, who is performing the current production at Rivendell, which is Eat Your Heart Out by Courtney Barron. So we're going to spend the first part of the interview talking about Rivendell, which has had some exciting developments recently, but has been around for quite a while, with Mary and Tara. And then Michael will join us to talk about the production itself. So, Tara, you were here from the very, very, very beginning.
That's right.
Which was
1995. So you're coming 94, up, 95.
You said you're coming up on your 20th season.
We're coming, that has to do with when we incorporated and when we founded the company. But
right.
My partner, Keith Kupfer, who's an actor here in town, and I moved to Chicago 23 years ago from New York. We did it backwards from the way most people do it.
Uh-huh.
And I had my equity card and an off-Broadway credit in my back pocket, and I thought I was going to take Chicago by storm. And, of course, being a 20-something woman with a union card, it didn't really quite go as planned. So after about 6 months of having lots of offers for companies that were asking me to drop my card, I got angry and waitressed my butt off and produced a workshop production that went very well. And I made my $300 investment back, and I thought I knew how to produce.
Right.
So that was kind of that very much the organic beginnings of the company. I wanted to be in charge of whether or not it was working. And because I was in the union, I was able to. The Chicago union office is really amenable and supportive and collaborative with its membership here in Chicago. So they really helped me figure out how I could produce and produce as an equity company, even though we were tiny.
And Mary, when did you come into the company, into the ensemble?
When Rivendell decided to produce Rents, that was when I came on board.
1996.
And you haven't talked about the mission of the company, but you have a very clear mission.
Yes.
How would you articulate it?
Rivendell Theater Ensemble is dedicated to advancing the lives of women through theater.
Was that what you would have said 20 years ago?
Absolutely not. 20 years ago, I would have said, I want to work and I want to do the plays I want to do.
Right.
But was a big part of my experience of coming here to Chicago, and this is true for most women in any kind of business, is that there weren't the opportunities for me that Keith had offered to him. There weren't the roles available. It's just a very challenging road to hoe as a young woman. You are expected to look a certain way and to type out. And if you don't fit into somebody's version of what that person should, a young woman should look like, then it's really challenging. There aren't a lot of interesting character roles written for 20-something, 30-something. Actually, there aren't a lot of great character roles written for women, or at least that get produced. And that's kind of what I bumped up against. So then we did the first show, did really well. We did the second show at the Organic. It was the old Organic when they used to be over on Clark Street.
Right.
And it was the same thing. I went in and I was like, I don't have any money. I'm doing this under an equity contract. They're allowing me to do it under this special agreement. And I can, and he said, what can you afford? And I said, I can afford $100 a week. And they gave us the space at the Organic for $100 a week. And we ran for 4 months or something crazy like that. The third show we did, we decided, and I think this is sort of funny, we decided we needed to do Rents before Anne kicked it, because we were like, oh, she's old. She's in her 70s. We better produce this while Anne's still around
still
to
going,
enjoy
right.
it. Yeah.
right.
And we did it at this tiny little space in Andersonville called Footsteps, which had a woman focus, which had a women-centric focus as well. And the play just took off. And we ran for several months in that time, or 8 weeks in that little space. And then we got a grant from the Driehaus Foundation, and we went back to the Organic, and we ran for another month and a half at the Organic.
Yeah.
And then we, during the summer, we took it to upstate New York and ran it for a couple of weeks in a little schoolhouse theater. And we got back that fall during the run at the Organic. We won in the Equity Jeff's Best New Work, Best Ensemble, and Best Supporting Actor.
For your third production.
Yeah, for a third production.
Nice. Yeah.
And Equity. So we were up against some...
Right. Heavy hitters.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun, those awards. We were like, woohoo!
Wow, look at us, right.
And it was absolutely women-centric. It was a really amazing experience for me as an artist to be able to offer, first of all, seven women really awesome roles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was very much the catalyst and very informative on who we wanted to be as a company. And we decided that was something that was going to be really important to us moving forward.
Yeah, yeah.
And looking back on your production history, it doesn't look to me like you only produce women playwrights, although there's probably a preponderance. Is that a fair?
We sometimes produce men's plays because sometimes men write really great roles for women.
But that would be the standard, you would say.
Yes.
If you wanted to define really what how you pick a play is that it has great roles for women.
I think so. I mean, you know, again, that has shifted and come into sharper focus over the 20 years we've been at this. I would say in the last 10 years, we've become really invested in and aggressive about doing new work. Mm-hmm. We pretty much in the last 10 years have not done anything that has not either been a world premiere or Chicago or Midwestern premiere. Mm-hmm. It's really important to me as we grow to learn and to become better at truly collaborating with playwrights and devising work is something that we're really interested in investigating and that we've been working on over the last 7 or 8 years. We did a piece called The Walls that we did at Steppenwolf 6 years ago now in the garage. And that was a play we devised from the ground up that Lisa then wrote for us. So for us, that was a really amazing experience and challenging and hard and taught us a lot about how not to do things.
Right.
So now we're in the middle of doing the same thing on this new project about women in the military.
Yeah.
Again, bringing it up from the ground up. And that's something we're all, as artists, really excited about, leveling the playing field so that all the artists in the room are collaborators and it isn't this hierarchical, you know, a playwright writes the play, the producer picks it, the director gets hired, then at the end of the day, we bring in actors.
Yeah.
You know, but how can we open it up so that we're all part of this experience?
The entire process.
Well, we should talk quickly about the space because after, 18 years as an itinerant company, you now have a very lovely space we're sitting in on Ridge Avenue. How did that happen? How did you make the decision to make that investment?
You know, in Chicago, it always feels like you have two options. You can pay your artists or you can have a space. We got very, very lucky in and blessed, really, when a man named Steve Masetic was doing a show over at the Gift Theater. Mm-hmm. And his dad Ivan owns this whole building and all the apartments in it. And Steve, where our theater is now, is a double storefront, had been shuttered up for 28 years. Mm-hmm. It had been a bar originally. And when Ivan took over the building, he didn't want to deal with the bar. And it had been boarded up to the point where Steve actually thought it was a basement. Yeah. And he was in the middle of doing the gift show one day and he came over to get something. His dad had all the extra stoves and refrigerators and all kinds, like it was like
landlord
a store.
Stuff.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it was like a dirt floor. And he said, he realized all of a sudden, oh my gosh, this is a storefront. Wow, I could put a theater in
here. We know what to do with storefronts in Chicago, right?
That's right. So he talked to Mike Thornton, who runs the Gift. Mm. And Mike said, oh, you should talk to Tara at Rivendell. They're a good company. I bet they'd be looking for a home. And he called me up and he said, you know, would you be interested in this and being the resident company? I'm like, hell yeah. And that's kind of how we have this really unique partnership. Because it's Steve's building, he actually rents it around us. We're just we are the resident company. Mm-hmm. We got a really generous grant from the Driehaus Foundation MacArthur Fund, PAV Fund, to put towards the build out. But Steve did the rest of it and did a lot of the work himself and has been just unbelievably generous. And because of a kind of unique partnership that we have, it made it feasible for us to actually still be an equity company, still pay our artists and actually have a home base.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really exciting.
Yeah, that's
we're at 5779 North Ridge Avenue.
And how has it changed the company to have a home? Does it, Mary, what's your experience of that?
Well, you know, it's nice because, now we get to choose when we're going to do the shows. because we don't depend on, you know, what's available out there. And it just sort of lends to the whole, you know, okay, well, we know we want this actor in this show. When are they available? And that's just been nice. And it's just been, it gives you a real sense of ownership with the company. Just knowing we have that space and even taking out the trash after the show.
That's Mary's job on this show.
And every Wednesday, getting in early to vacuum. There's a sense of pride and ownership that you feel having your own space.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think the biggest shift for Rivendell with having a theater or an artistic home has been being able to connect with the community. Mm-hmm. I think we all know this is true, but to the extent that it was true, I think I was unaware of how when you are working at somebody else's space, half the audience that comes to see your show doesn't really grasp that you're not that company.
Right.
And, you know, that can be really awesome when you're at Steppenwolf.
Right.
Get a lot of audience.
Right.
Because they just go to see everything in the garage.
But it's not your audience.
But it's not your audience.
In a way,
and
right.
You're not carrying them with you.
Right.
And I think for us, our biggest challenge, but also the biggest gift this has given us, is to be part of this community mm-hmm. in Edgewater, which is so culturally vibrant and exciting.
Yeah.
And we're scratching at the surface. I mean, we have a long way to go, but my goal is to become the jewel of Edgewater. That's what we're working towards.
That sounds good.
Great. Right?
Well, maybe at this point we could bring Michael in and talk about Eat Your Heart Out. But before you leave, Tara, let me just ask you, because I know that you had seen the play at Humana, right?
Yes.
And is that how it came to the company? I also noticed, Mary, that you had performed in another Court and Barron production. So I didn't know who found what.
I went down to the Humana Festival. Again, the Driehaus Foundation, God love them, sent me down on a professional development grant. And I went to see the play. And it was in the smaller space. It's kind of like an amphitheater. So I was down on the floor. So I was literally in light watching it. And I'm laughing and I'm laughing. And then there's this scene where they're buying the prom dress.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, and the rest of the production, I'm sobbing and snot's coming out of my nose.
There was a lot of that in the audience the night I saw it.
And the play ended and I ran out of the theater and I sat on, you know, Main Street there in Louisville, just a wreck. I was just wrecked.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I have to have this play.
Yeah.
And then I began to stalk Courtney at that Humana Festival, and I'm sure she thought I was just the biggest, scariest freak ever. And I think maybe she gave us the rights because she just wanted to
make
get rid of me.
Alone, right, right.
But then after I said to Mary, this is a play, and she's like, oh, Courtney, I know Courtney. And I think Mike had worked with her husband in New York. Mm-hmm. And so it was this.
It all fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is an interesting thing. I don't think have there been other productions since you met?
No.
And it was kind of as people describe it, it was the hit of
Absolutely.
The festival.
So, it's a, you know, challenging casting wise. I think there's some casting challenges in it.
Why is that?
You know, I think it's the role of Evie is a hard role.
Right.
It's scary. It's a scary role.
And my husband and I were talking about that. Could you cast a teenager? It's a role, just to give the listeners a little bit of context as we talk about this, of a very overweight teenage girl who really has to let it hang out
on stage
in a way that probably would be pretty hard for someone exactly that age. And I thought this actress totally was able to.
So, she was so beautiful.
Right.
As was the girl I saw do it. In Louisville.
Yeah.
But it's challenging, and you're absolutely right.
Role,
I think it has to do with the age.
Yeah.
Like, to find a young actor who's willing to go to the kind of emotional place that Evie has to go to is really, really challenging.
Yeah.
Plus, let's face it, in the United States, if you're not a pixie thin, you are not encouraged to be an actor as a woman. It's again, like going back to what I said earlier, it's a very different thing for men.
Mm-hmm.
Men can be chubby and cute and charismatic and work on TV and work on film. Women are not encouraged that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're so subjected to the Hollywood influence of, wow, you have to look like, you know, Angelina Jolie in order to have a career.
Right.
And it's really unfortunate. It doesn't exist like that in other countries. You know, it doesn't exist like that for men.
Right.
It's, I mean, not that men aren't subjected to a certain amount of that, but
worse for women. And that's something that the play is about, I think,
yeah,
to a degree. I was interested to, well,
no, say it.
No, I want to bring Michael in. We're going to run out of time. That's really all. But it is, I think we're so screwed up about weight. And there was an interesting blog about the Humana show. I don't know if you would have happened to read it, but it was a young woman who kept talking about how seeing that overweight actor on the stage just totally took her out of the play. And all she could think about was how hard it must have been for the actors to do it. And I thought that was so strange that that was all she could think about.
Right.
And that it was that, I think, essentially shocking to her that someone who wasn't, you know,
beautiful,
conventionally
or
beautiful,
what
right,
we call,
right,
yeah,
would be willing to be not quite naked, but certainly
yeah,
exposed on stage. And that was, I thought she was sort of telling a lot about herself
yeah,
and about some sickness in our culture
yeah,
through that reaction.
Well, I actually had a patron email me the most wonderful thing I thought anyone could have responded, which was he was speaking directly to that moment in the play where
yeah,
she kind of has to expose a little bit of herself. And he said, you know, when I'm looking at her, and I thought, she's really beautiful.
Right.
And we make this all up.
Right. Right.
Well, she's a beautiful young girl.
Right.
And the way that she just stands there and lets people look at her, it's really stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Good. All right. Well, so Michael Salish is going to join us now to talk some more about the production of Eat Your Heart Out. And a fun fact to know is that Mary and Michael are married and
yay,
play husband and wife in the show.
Okay.
So I'm actually interested in that because I wonder how hard one of the actor's jobs is to, of course, you bring yourself to the role, but you also are in some way trying to transform into something that isn't you. I would imagine that playing a married couple as a married couple sort of squares that problem, that you not only have to play the character, not yourself, but you have to play the character's relationship and not your actual relationship.
Yes.
There's a lot of nodding going on.
Yes.
So talk about that.
Some of it's easier and some of it's more difficult. I had to come to the show one night at a rehearsal or something. I was like, hey, Mary, could you talk to me? And we like went outside in the alleyway and I was like, are you going to do blah? I was like, I need to be good with you. Like when we were hashing out a problem out in the alley while having to like, and you're trying to play this couple who's trying to get this, have a kid and you're desperate to do that and you love each other and the things that are bubbling up are deep things, you know,
yeah,
that you don't usually address. And so it's like, yeah, so it can be difficult that way. So it's, but it's also trusting and we know each other. And so
right,
it's like, it's easy. So we can, you know, like, just like if you're playing a couple and you have to kiss in the show and like you kiss for the first, you're like, okay, let's kiss. And like, you need to just kiss. And so that, and it's like, yeah,
no
whatever.
Problem
there's
with
no
that,
problem with that.
Right.
No problem with body language. No problem with like touching her or touching like her lower back or
mm-hmm,
like whatever you do as a couple that
right,
you're comfortable with.
Right.
We had some funny moments in rehearsal though, several times when there was one point when I think Hallie Gordon, who directed, Mike and I all kind of looked at each other after a moment and Mike was like, you know, I think we all sort of, I can't remember who said it, but I think it was Mike who was like, I think we've been miscast. I think that I should have been Alice and Mary should have been Dave. Because we, you know, part of our personalities are sort of swapped,
uh-huh,
you know, which is
uh-huh,
kind of interesting. And Hallie at one point too said, after this is over, you guys are going to either want to take separate vacations or you're going to want to adopt a baby. And we all laughed. There was a pause, and I said, I hope it's
separate vacations. Vacation.
Well, it would be interesting to, I could imagine some, you know, couples therapy where you're told to play each other. I mean, actually to investigate living in the other person's temperament might be kind of, I don't know.
You always hear actors say, well, I get to play, you know, feel what the life of another person is. And, you know, and I think to a certain extent that's true, but this one I think really was true. And I really, I like doing it and I like acting. Just, I think I get to, I think you get to love people. You know, you play like, I played like a corporate guy who was like this lobbyist for DC, and he was just slimy, and he was having an affair with behind his.
Not in this play.
Totally other play. And so it's like, and then you kind of go, you can kind of understand where it comes from. I mean, that's your job as an actor, right? So, I mean, this one is like, oh, am I really that awful at home in this play? It's like, oh, and I think it's made me be more gentle and more compassionate and more, you know, aware of her side of things. I mean, like, I'll be kind of personal. We had a moment today where we're kind of arguing about something, like you do, or, you know, and I walked away, and I think being in the show and having to like be together to try to get this baby, right, in this relationship made me go, it just doesn't matter. And I would not be that way usually. I'd hold on to it and scream at each other, or we'd yell.
Get and it's like, and I'd want to be. Right.
Yeah. And then I just came in and just hugged her and was like, we're fine. And it's like, you know, and I'm not that way usually. I start to get impassioned and like yell. And she's like, you're yelling. I'm not yelling. And I'm yelling. I'm like, I'm not yelling. I'm trying to get you to see. Cause I do come from, I mean, like there's certain aspects of Gabe that I definitely do come from, a broken home and divorce at about the same age. My parents divorced when I was about 12, 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And, so there's a lot of that, you know, so.
You looked like you were going to interject.
No, I thought,
No, she thought I was talking too much, and I'm joking. Shh, you're talking, yeah. That's
true. They're practically doing a scene from the play right now.
Oh my God.
No, it's funny, because, I mean, this is really the first time, we were in a play together in New York years ago.
Is that how you met?
No, we met in Chicago, actually through Rivendell. And then...
went together to New York.
We eventually went to New York. And then... we were doing a play there, and it was a full-length play, but we didn't have one scene together. And then we did a 10-minute play together. So that's the only time we've been on stage together.
Really? Interesting, yeah.
We did a film together, a feature film that's going to be coming out later this year called Fools. And that was really great. But it was different than this. This has been a really, it's actually been really great. And it has been frustrating at times because it is a play like that, you know, it's a long commitment with the rehearsals and the, you know, and Mike's right. It's like, we're never home. So, you know, why isn't the floor vacuumed, you know? And it does get to be, you know, that's been, and we don't have kids, you know, so I can't even imagine trying to do that with children.
Yeah.
I think generally when two actors are married and have children, they just take turns. They never show at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know how they could do it otherwise.
Yeah.
Pretty tough. Well, let's talk a little more broadly about the play. And I think Tara said this, it is very much of an ensemble piece.
Six
cast members, right? So there are kind of three interlocking stories, and yours is one of them. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted, you know, people to understand that you are a third of the play.
Yes.
And it's I think my interest in talking about it has a lot to do with the writing. I really do think it's a wonderful play, very well written, very kind of unpretentious. It's not trying to stretch and be grandiose and say huge things. It's just saying somewhat small things really clearly and well, I feel like. So I maybe talk a little bit about your own reactions to the script when you first encountered it and any challenges that there were other than your dual marriages, the warring marriages on stage, in the script for you.
Well, when I first read it, and I have been, we know Courtney from New York, and I did a 10-minute play of hers years and years and years ago. And her husband is also a writer, Blair Singer, and we both have been in plays that Blair has written as well. So we've known them for a while, and I just love the way Courtney writes. She's just got such humor. Mm-hmm. And everyone is so human. And one of the frustrating things about this play is that everybody is so human. It's like, if everybody would just zip it and shut up and not go there, it would be okay. But they can't, because we don't, you know, and that's, you know, I didn't see it at Humana, but when I read it, I had a similar reaction to what Tara had when she saw it. And it just sort of hit me in the gut. And I thought it was incredibly moving and beautiful and funny. And one of the things that's challenging about it is that the scenes are pretty short. You know, they do bounce around between right. these different relationships and stuff. And, you know, you were seated on stage for quite a bit of it, and you have to just get right back into, you know, when your scene is on, there's no downtime backstage, there's no preparing, you know, okay, for my next scene, you're there, and you have to keep that energy going.
Yeah.
One of the things I was wondering, because I didn't have a problem at all when I read it, understanding, because the structure of the play is really interesting.
Because it goes back from the first scene. Goes back
I mean,
time.
Gabe and I, Gabe and Alice, tell their story.
Jeez. Right, I'll see you guys.
Mike and Mary, Gabe and Alice.
Mike and Mary, yeah.
Their story is told from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so is Tom's on his date. And so are the kids. But Nance bounces around, you know, in time. I was like, God, I wonder if this is going to be the kind of thing that, is that going to play? Mm-hmm. All right. You know, or does it read better? But I think Courtney is so smart. I think it works.
Well, did you have to, as you were rehearsing it, did it matter what order you rehearsed the scenes? I mean, your story, since you say it's essentially in order, I wouldn't imagine that affects you as much.
No, the thing that affected us more, I think, is, you know, what we all have to do. Like I said, we
have to
keep that energy up. You can't let it drop for the next scene.
So this is interesting, because now I realize I can't answer this question, even having seen the play 3 days ago. Is there any time lost between, so we see a bit of your scene and then it stops and we go to another scene and then we pick up. Do we pick up in the next second, or do you?
No. Sometimes, a lot of the time, but not all the
not
time.
Always.
I think like the first, well, there's our first scene. Then we get into like a little argument and I walk off stage. I leave, and then a scene happens that's about 20 seconds long, and I come back out, and that's about how much time has probably passed in that particular scene.
Yeah.
And then a lot of it is, as it progresses through the play, as we progress through the play, it does get more stop, go to another scene, cut right back, and pick it up.
Right. So it's kind of like the pause button for each of the stories, and we cut away. So describe then, how, what do you do in the time between you just, you know, we just hit pause, and there you are, and then you have to pick it up. What do you do in the time between when another scene is playing to stay in that moment or get back to that moment when you have to?
You know, I think sometimes... God, what do you do? That's a good question. What do you do?
No,
you know, I think it's really listening. You know, I think a big thing, you know, kind of helped that was we're all out on stage. You know, we walk off stage, but we don't leave the room. We're in these chairs that are back against the wall, like right next to the audience or right behind the audience. So you kind of are listening to the entire play. And the thing for me that I do is I just kind of like listen to the play, and I almost let it inform me emotionally what's going to happen to what's happening inside Gabe. At one point, everything falls apart for us, and then it cuts over to a monologue by the young guy who is completely had it with this long distance relationship. And he's like, can I curse right now?
Yes, absolutely.
So
yes.
He's like,
this is the
fuck
internet.
You, fuck this. Fuck your such and such bullshit, blah,
right.
blah. And I'm like, that's what's happening inside of us.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what's happening inside of all of us.
That's
me
very
and
interesting.
You know, their characters at that time. This is a reminder. What's going on in this scene is informing me right now.
Right.
So it just helps you to stay in the moment.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because what I was thinking is, you know, like if you think of it as continuity in a film, right? You wouldn't actually want to let what happened in between get in the way, because it's not about you. It's nothing to do with where you ended the last scene and start the next one. But what really matters is the experience the audience is having from one scene to the other. And there is an arc for us that goes through all the three stories, and it suddenly seems fine to me that you're plugging in not to the arc of your story only, but to the arc of the whole play, because that's what we, the audience, mm-hmm. are experiencing. Sure.
Right in.
I mean, it almost makes me wonder how it ever works any other way. How can it be that actors can come on stage and do a scene not having been part of the arc that the audience is experiencing and plug into the right energy? I mean, I guess that's part of what rehearsal does, and mm-hmm. you know as you come on stage what it is you need to accomplish, and you know what's just happened.
You have to hit. Mm-hmm.
But there still is a difference, of course, night to night, where the energy gets to while you're off stage. And it suddenly seems like, wow, how does it, you know, how can it ever be as good if you don't do this
from now on?
Well, it is a lovely play, and I think it's a fine production in a pretty space with nice bathrooms. And thanks very much for joining me to talk about Ichihara.